Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 18th of Iyar, which is Lag BaOmer. Today we're going to see a responsum of Rav Cook's from Shut Orach Mishpat, the Orach Chaim section, Simon Pei Hey, responsum number 85, from Yud Chedi Yar Tafrei Tzadi Hey, which is, as I said, Lag BaOmer, but which he doesn't speak of as Lag BaOmer. He just says it's Yud Chedi Yar. Okay, so the story of this responsum was that a Jew had agreed with a non-Jew to buy a certain amount of flour from him before Pesach, and they didn't make any kind of a kinyan. There was no active acquisition on this flour. It was just an agreement they had. So, and then on Chol HaMoed Pesach, the non-Jew showed up and wanted to deliver the flour. So it wasn't the non-Jew, it was a messenger of the non-Jew, a delivery boy, and he brings the flour, and the Jew isn't there. So he doesn't take possession of it. Okay, so I think we were talking about the fact that the non-Jew's messenger had brought the flour, and the Jew himself hadn't taken delivery. His daughter was home. He wasn't in the house or in the factory, wherever it was. He wasn't in the place. And the daughter showed the non-Jewish messenger where to place the flour. And then the Jew came, and so the messenger demanded a receipt about the fact that he delivered flour, meaning, you know, if I'm taking delivery on 30 sacks of flour and the messenger, and it's $1,000 job, whatever it is, and the messenger wants a receipt to make sure that he got proof that he delivered it. And so the question now is, this Jew apparently is taking delivery on flour on Pesach. Do we have to treat it as Chametz Shavar Alav Pesach? Well, there is a rule in the Gemara to debate whether it's Doraita or Rabbanan. We assume halakhically that it's Derabbanan. The Rabbanan punish those who hold Chametz over Pesach, that Chametz becomes completely Asur B'Hanah. You can't get any benefit from it. Okay, now the Jew had sold, so part of his business apparently was the Chametz. So the Jew had sold his Chametz in the regular Mekiras Chametz HaNehuga Etzleinu. Right? He told the Chametz that is the common custom for Chametz that was the custom at the time, and he part of that, and this is something that I hadn't known until I saw this tshuva, another tshuva like it, was that the custom used to be that you'd give over a key to the non-Jew, and you would, and it happened to be this year, I'm recording this soon after Pesach, this year there's some whole hubbub in a couple of places where a non-Jew decided he wanted the chametz, he showed up to take delivery of the chametz, because he misunderstood or whatever, and that creates all sorts of halachic problems. So in this case, in Rav Cook's case, the man had given over the key, which was part of showing that the non-Jew now owns the store as it is, and the daughter found another key, meaning really he had given over the key, so theoretically this whole store wasn't his over Pesach. The daughter who took delivery of the chametz found another key in the house, you know, like an extra key, and she took it, and then the messenger himself was the one who put the chametz in, so she never touched, not the chametz, the can of flour, and she never touched it. The new Jew didn't know about it, and then afterwards when he said, I need a receipt, so he gave him a receipt because he demanded a receipt. So that's the question. Does this count as the Jew having taken possession of, now it's important to say, taking possession of chametz on Pesach, right? So we'll get to that part of it. Such that will qualify as chametz shavar alav Pesach, will qualify as chametz that was owned by a Jew over Pesach, and therefore become usher, and that would be a financial burden for sure. So he says, Rav Cook says, it's clear to him that there's no issue of chametz shavar alav Pesach here. First of all, he says, we don't generally think that flour is chametz, right? That's a whole question. If the flour got wet, so then you'd have to worry that it got wet and it became chametz, but we don't generally assume that. We are kaimalan. Our halachic assumption is, should be that let's say, for example, somebody didn't have any matzah, like ran out of matzah, ran out of bread stuff over Pesach. What do? Are they just stuck? I remember years ago, it's a memory that stuck with me a long time. I was somewhere for Pesach in a place where they didn't have as many Jewish services as one might have preferred. And so that there was one kosher store in town at the time. So, and those, the people who owned that one kosher store, they would choose to go away for Pesach. So you bought before Pesach all the stuff you assumed you were going to need. And if you ran out, that's it. It was over. And I remember that Pesach, this is many, many years ago, but that Pesach, we were rationing potato chips because every time somebody took potato chips, you'd say, you know, have as many as you want. But you got to know when those potato chips run out, no more potato chips. So here, and let's say you're in a situation where it's not a question of potato chips, a question of flour, which is the stuff of life, and you need it for matzah, for whatever you're going to make. So the halacha is that if you end up running out of matzah, you could, this was the halacha in the time of Cook, it'll depend on the flour of every time that you have, you could buy flour from the market to make, you know, matzah or whatever, to eat from it on Pesach. It would be a complicated thing because you have to make sure it never became chametz, but you are allowed to do such things. So, because we don't think that ordinary is chemical. Now, I think in our days, you have bleached flour and unbleached flour. So, I think bleached flour has been treated in such a way that there is more of a worry, according to some poskim, that it's because that you have to worry that it became chametz even more so than a time of rekuk. That would be a whole different discussion of its own. But the fundamental halacha was, if you had real, just regular flour, we don't assume that it has turned into chametz, and therefore you are okay, because then in this case where he takes delivery, he didn't take delivery on chametz, he took delivery on kemach, on flour. We don't think flour is, halacha lemaisa, is chametz in these kinds of situations. Now the Ritva did have a chumra, did have a stringency about flour and buying flour over the course of Pesach, because he held that the flour that belongs to non-Jews, he thought, if it belongs to a specific non-Jew, non-Jews in general, that was worse than flour from the market. The amount of flour from the market would let's say you could find Jews who own flour, you found just some people who own flour, that would be one thing. But he thought that in the non-Jews of his time, and Rav Kook is going to point out all the non-Jews of his time, the non-Jews of his time, they would, in the course of grinding wheat into flour, they would bring the wheat close to the water, and therefore you had more reason, Ritva said, he had more reason to worry that the flour had become chametz because it was close to water. So Rav Kook says, yeah, that only applies where the way that you grind things was by grinding them with a grinder that's turned by a water wheel. Meaning the question is the power source of how you grind something. You grind something by putting the wheat into some big heavy thing that grinds it up, it turns and just turns and grinds it up into flour. But what is it that gets it to where you get the energy from? Today, let's say it might be electric. But in the times of the Ritva, you would often have it be a water wheel because the power of water is very strong. So if you have a river pushing, it can push a wheel around through the force of the river going by it. And then that wheel can turn another wheel and that turns the grinder. So you had that situation. So there is what the Rav Kook was talking about. What the Ritva was talking about. The Ritva was talking about in his time, since they did it by water and they would grind it near the water, you had a problem because he thought that meant that much of the flour might have come into contact with water, not on purpose, but might have come into water, and therefore you had to worry that it become chametz. But if you have other machines, like they do in Rav Kook's time already, that are the ways that you grind wheat into flour, then you no longer have that worry nearly as much, and therefore that would change it, and that would say that even according to the opinions that it said you can't buy flour from the market, would nowadays in Rav Kook's time, in 1935, Tzofrit Sadihei, would think that you could. And by the way, he says, the Ra'ah knew the Ritva's opinion, and the Ra'ah said, he said though that even according to the Ritva, while he understands the Ritva's Chumrah, and the Ritva applies also to Jews who are not very careful with their flour, he nonetheless he thought that even in those situations, if you had, if you had no other choice, you could buy that flour too. So, if that's true, he says, if in a situation, it's Rav Kook now, back to Rav Kook, if in a situation where you have all this pressure and you don't have any other way to get matzah, you can buy flour and make matzah for it, then there's no way that in the reverse situation, you can say to yourself, I have to worry this chametz shavah lev pesach, right? It can't be chametz shavah lev pesach because it could be matzah. So, even though he says now, there are chonim who say that what about places where they actually wash the wheat? So they don't wash the, now the wheat is not ground yet. They wash the wheat and then they let it dry and they leave it in the water for a while. So there we say, this would be more like I think today's bleached flour. There you couldn't say that we can allow you to buy kemach min hashuk. But nonetheless, even in a chadat chak, because there you have to worry that when the water is soaked in the wheat, you worry that the water itself might have leavened somehow. Even there, though, the Chok Yaakov had said that that's only where they definitely washed it, they definitely soaked it, so we can't say that maybe it just happened to get soft on its own. But if we don't know it, even though we know that there's some percentage of people who do it, now they don't talk about whether it's a majority or not, and we don't have to worry about regular flour. So it seems to me, it's not here on the Shuvah as far as I can tell, but it seems that would be a question of majority or not majority. If the majority of people soak their wheat, then I would think you'd have to worry about it because it's a row. But I think he's saying, Chok Yaakov is saying, even if you no until, let's say, 30% of people do it, and you come across wheat that is soft, you might say to yourself, oh, here I have to worry. He's saying you don't necessarily have to worry in that situation. So nowadays, though, in Rav Kook's time, he says, where we have these machines that clean the wheat with the wheat without needing water for it, or without needing a lot of water. They conserve water, so that's a good thing for conservation purposes, but it's also a good thing for chametz purposes. So even when they're getting fine flour, the point of fine flour is that you got out all of the impurities from the wheat, all the dirt and stuff that comes along with wheat. You got it out ahead of time, so that's what makes fine flour. One way to do that is to sift it over and over again, but another way to do it is to wash the wheat carefully before you even grind it into flour. So nowadays they have machines that wash the wheat and will give you very fine, good flour without dirt particles in it, without a lot of water. So Rav Kook says, so why should we have to worry about a suffik derabanan for chametz shaval of Pesach? Meaning, it would be one question if our question is for making chametz or making matzah on Pesach, you're worried about that. Something might have become chametz, something might have become leaven. That's one whole level of worry, because there, if you're eating the wrong thing, you're eating chametz on Pesach, and that would be terrible. But here, what we're talking about is the level of worry you're required to have in terms of whether something qualifies as chametz shaval of Pesach, which is a derabanan, and in derabanan in general, our requirements to worry are at a whole different level. More than that, he says, even if the wheat was in water, was actually in water, we don't have to worry that every piece of wheat has become chametz, right? Because usually what happens is you put it in the water and it's in a bundle, so the major soaking comes to the outside wheat, and the inner wheat gets some, but not much. If that's true, when they get ground together, then in the whole chametz is nitbatel lifnei Pesach. That's an important principle that we don't always pay as much attention to as we can, that before Pesach, chametz is completely permissible. Completely permissible means that it's an item of permissibility, and the rules for bittel, for nullification, are significantly looser in that situation. So that's why just recently somebody said to me that their custom is, you know, with some other item, if it was done, you know, in a majority, then it's butthole, right? We, in a lot of cases, we think that if things are mixed up with a majority of other things, the majority rules, right? Things are butthole beril. So here, too, the chametz, if there was chametz, if we're saying that it's not all the wheat that got wet, it's a minority of the wheat that got wet, then it got mixed in the grinding with the other things. So when chametz shavar lepesach, ayideh tarovet, right now, if you have chametz shavar lepesach, they got mixed in with other things. So let's even say some of that wheat was chametz, turned into chametz, and it was chametz owned by, let's say it didn't get blended even before Pesach, it got blended in after Pesach, but some people think that even then, it's a batel b'rov. I'm sorry, there was chametz shaval b'Pesach, it was in its rov before Pesach, so you might say, some people say that that counts as being batel b'rov in terms of chametz shaval of Pesach. Now then, some people say, nope, you need 60 for that, the standard for that is 60, which is a possibility, right? That's a question of bittel that we've seen on other occasions. Bittel is nullification. One rule is that it can be batel b'rov, that if there's a majority of other stuff, it overwhelms it, and we can look at the whole thing as being the permissible materials. In other situations, particularly in kosher situations, there's very often a requirement of shishim because we're worried that the taste of the prohibited items comes through, and as long as the taste comes through, it's still there. It can't be considered nullified, so that would require 60. But many poskim held, this is what Rav Kook is saying, there are many poskim who held that in yavesh b'yavesh, everybody agrees that it would still nonetheless be one, it gets to two, meaning as long as it's only a third, meaning it's not, a majority is not good enough, but once it's less than a third, if it's yavesh b'yavesh, yavesh b'yavesh means dry food with dry food. We'll get to whether or not this counts as dry food with dry food in a second. The simple example of dry food would be, let's say you had three steaks. So steaks are separate items, and you know that one of the steaks is prohibited for whatever reason. So there are those who held that even if we're in a situation where rove wouldn't work, majority wouldn't work, if it's a third, so let's say there were 10 steaks and four of them were a problem, there a majority generally works, but let's say it didn't work for some reason, like in our situation where you're worried about chametz shaval of Pesach, chametz that was owned by a Jew over Pesach who was mixed into a mixture. Let's say you held that a majority didn't work. There are poskim who held, though, that if it's dry materials, as long as it's one third, that's okay. Okay? So what about flour? So flour is a problem because generally when we say yavish b'yavish, part of what we think makes it dry and dry is they don't really mix together. Whereas liquids completely mix together, right? When you put in, let's say, grape juice into water, it completely mixes together. It shares a color and the color changes, whatever, but it's all mixed together. There's no, like, water anymore. With flour, that was a question of halacha, what flour mixed with other flour counts as. In some sense, it's much more thoroughly mixed together than even, let's say, than pieces of meat in a stew. Pieces of meat in a stew, each piece of meat, its own piece of meat still. They're not as, so that's yavesh, yavesh. It's true, it's not yavesh, it's not dry. So, if steaks, right? But flour is somewhere in the middle because it's thoroughly mixed, but it's not as completely mixed as liquids, because liquids actually become a solution. They become they make a whole new thing that's all mixed together, whereas flour is just, there are a lot of little pieces. Theoretically, if I had microscopes, I could take each piece of flour separately and see which kind of flour it was, if I had different kinds of flour. So some held that it counted as yavesh biyavesh. Some held that it counted as dry materials with each other. And therefore, he says, in our situation, he thinks it's clear that you could be mitzaref lahakel. You could use it as a leniency. That's all about whether you actually had chametz shaval of a Pesach. Because if you didn't have chametz shaval of a Pesach, if you didn't have chametz that had been owned by a Jew over the course of Pesach, you never had a problem to begin with. So that would be, that's all that discussion was, to say, maybe we don't. How's the maybe we don't? Because you have flour. So is flour chametz or not? Flour on its own is not chametz. That everybody agrees. Problem is, we don't know if this flour was washed carefully to make sure that it didn't become chametz. So reasons why it might have become chametz were, it might have had contact with water that we didn't know about. It's in places where they tend to, like I said, in our times, for example, if you held that bleaching the flour in some way involves a water process, then that would be a problem. In their times, what they knew of was, there were people who soaked the wheat before they ground it in order to clean it, and maybe that was enough that you'd have to worry that the wheat had become already prone to becoming chametz, and therefore this flour actually has chametz in it. Seems to be not true, though, because we have a general practice that if we run out of matzah, you can buy flour from the market, meaning from non-Jews, or even from Jews, even though we don't know them to be so careful, meaning you can certainly buy it from Jews who we know to be careful about chametz issues and Torah issues like that. But you can even buy it from Jews who are not so careful, because we don't generally assume, it seems to be, that flour has been turned into chametz. Even according to the Ritva, well, you have to worry about it because he said the non-Jews used to bring the wheat close to water. Rav Kook says it's only for those who used a water mill to push as the power source for pushing the grinder, the I don't know what the word is, the grinder for the flour. And then in terms of those who would wash or their chametz, who would wash their wheat beforehand, you have to worry that some of this, he said, but even there you could say, well, it's really only the outer wheat. And the inner wheat you wouldn't think it got, and therefore you could say that it got mixed in, and once it got mixed in, there was a majority that was still okay. And then you get into all those questions of majority. Before we get to the majority questions, one thing that I left out was, the Rav Kook says, in our time, we have machines that wash the wheat much more efficiently, and therefore you don't have to worry even about that. But even if you did have to worry about that, once it got mixed in, you then have to worry or think about the question of whether or not, when there's a majority of other things, whether that majority of other things can be vatal. So if the majority has not been washed, has not been wetted, so then it's not, that flour is not going to be in any way chametz, or any way a problem of chametz. And then even if you say that the majority isn't enough, you need 60, there are those who hold that one third would be enough if it's yavesh biyavesh, dry with dry, and then that would be a question about flour, whether it's dry with dry. All of that was on the basis of the question of maybe we have chametz here, maybe we have chametz of alav pesach here. So even if you assume, so if you have all those reasons to say that you don't, you're fine. But let's even assume that you actually have chametz here, and the chametz now has been over Pesach. But the only problem with chametz that's been over Pesach, that has lived through Pesach, is only in a situation where it was owned by the Jew over Pesach. So if this kemach, if this flour actually had chametz in it, then you'd have the problem of the Jew took delivery. So now the question is, well, the Jew took delivery, is that ownership by the Jew? So he says, there's no kinyan here, there's no acquisition here, because we have a general principle halacha that isura lo nechale de likne, that Jews don't want to own, Jews don't want to own items of prohibition. Right, they don't. So if they don't, then we would say that here, he never really wanted to take possession of it. More so, that store where the delivery happened was sold to a non-Jew. So if the store was sold to a non-Jew, even though the daughter tells the guy to put the bags down in the store, he's putting back the bags down in a store that belongs to a non-Jew. So that's who took possession of it. Therefore, we don't have a problem of chametz shavar alav ha-pesach. In fact, he says there's an iter. So the answer held, I'm sorry, that even if the non-Jew had put down the chametz in the house of a Jew without any specific agreement, the Jew didn't say specifically, I don't want to take possession of it, nonetheless, the iter held, it doesn't qualify as chametz shavar alav ha-pesach, as chametz owned by a Jew for Pesach, because, right, because the Jew can say, I didn't want to take possession of it, and I only had to do it with a Jew, but I didn't really, with a non-Jew, I didn't really want to take possession of it because it's prohibited material. So The only reason they just says, the only reason that they didn't allow that halachically was people were being very makil about this issue. They were just taking delivery as if it was all fine, and therefore there was a place to worry that the Jew would maybe in fact buy chametz on Pesach, and therefore, and really buy it, and therefore they made a geder. And the geder was, you can't take delivery in your home of chametz on Pesach. So the answer says it's only because of a geder, not a halacha. And therefore, if the store has been properly sold to a non-Jew, and it happened this way, that's an important, like, it's always important in halacha to see the difference between when somebody comes to a rabbi with an honest mistake and an honest error, an honest situation, so the rabbi wants to help out, and he wants to find a kula. But the answer is pointing out that sometimes those kulot, once they're on the books, become the source for people doing things that nobody's really happy about. So in this situation, you have that situation, that thing, right? You don't want it to be true. The Jews are just taking delivery of chametz on Pesach because the Torah said we're not allowed to own chametz on Pesach. You say, I'll have a non-Jew own it. So if a non-Jew really owns it in some real halachic way, that would be one thing. So the Yitzhak was saying he thinks that if it happened that a non-Jew delivered items to a Jew on Pesach, even in the Jew's home, that's not chametz on Pesach because the Jew clearly didn't really want to take possession of it. But if it was done on purpose, that would be more of a situation. For our situation, where it wasn't done on purpose, Rav Cook says there's plenty of room here, he thinks, to be makil, to be lenient, to say the Jew didn't really take possession of it at all. So even if it was chametz, you wouldn't have to worry about it. And you certainly also wouldn't have to worry about it here because it's not even so clearly chametz. Also, there is a rule that the Jew has to say out loud, I don't want to take possession of it, not to the non-Jew, but I don't want my possession, but to say it in general, that would be complicated to me, because that would mean other people would steal it, and other people could take it, and if they took it, they wouldn't be stealing it, because the Jew would have said, I don't want to take possession of it, leave that for another time, but there are those who held, or it's possible, the Rush had held, it was possible, that if the Jew didn't say it out loud, the general halachic principle of that he doesn't want, nobody wants to come into possession of things that are prohibited for them to take advantage of, and he was only machmir if there was some reason to think that he really wanted to take possession of it in some way. So here, Rav Cook says, it's the Jew himself didn't take possession, just the daughter, and it's not clear the daughter has the right to take possession for her father, and therefore we have no reason to say that he really wanted to take possession of it. And even though the Beis Yosef was machmir to agree with the Rush that you have to say out loud, I don't want to have this become mine, and he didn't do that in this situation, you could say that was only in that in that place where they had special rules. But in our situation, there wasn't, then it should be okay. So you say, well, but the daughter showed the guy the place. So he says, that's not enough, he thinks, to obligate the father and implicate the father in the taking possession of it. So even though the Beis Yosef was mocking like the Rosh, and there was a certain situation where a non-Jew sent the bread on the last day of Pesach to a Jew, and then the maid didn't know what was going on, so she accepted it. When the Jew heard about it, he immediately said, you know what, go put it in a hidden place in a non-Jew's possession, meaning he's sort of indicating he doesn't want to take possession of it, and he asked the rabbi the next day, and the rabbi said, no, you can, because you clearly didn't want to take possession of something that's prohibited. But the Beis Yosef said, but the Rosh says that no, we need the Jew to have said it out loud, he doesn't want it anymore, and he wasn't there, and it was only the shifcha, it was only the maid, the housekeeper, who took possession of it. Nonetheless, says Rav Cook, he says, he doesn't think that it was about that situation, it was in general that we do think that you don't want to take possession of it. So that's the other way to get a leniency. So one leniency is whether it's chametz or not, that's the whole question. The other leniency is whether you take possession or not. Since we generally assume that Jews don't want to take possession of items that are not theirs, there are more machmir positions, more stringent positions that require, like the Rush, saying out loud you don't want to take possession of it. But he thinks there's enough here to say, especially since it wasn't the Jew himself did it, was the daughter, and you could say the daughter's rights don't extend fully to those situations. Therefore, he thinks that you can rely on this idea that Jews do not want it to come into possession of materials that belong, that don't, of possession that are of materials that are prohibited to them. Adding to that, of course, that the place was, but the place belonged to a non-Jew. So the only act of acquisition that occurred was just the writing of a kabbalah of a receipt. But the act of acquisition that occurred was that of placing in a chutz or in an area of possession that belonged to somebody else. But in this case, that somebody else is the non-Jew. So the giving of a receipt he says, is not proof of a desire to take possession or to be obligated to anybody else. That's just, I guess, helping the non-Jewish messenger fulfill that he had done his job. And therefore, with all these situations where we don't know if it's chametz, and you have all these reasons to think you don't want to take possession of it, he thinks you'd have to worry about chametz, shavah, lava, pesach. So, for the 18th of Iyar, we'll cut ourselves short here today and give you one more time to say, I don't always take more of your time, sometimes I take less of your time. Since I'm taking less of your time today, I will just stop here and say that on the 18th of Iyar of Tafrei Tzadi Hei, of 1935, Rav Kook allowed the chametz of a non-Jew, the flour of a non-Jew that had been delivered to a Jew on Pesach, and did not require the Jew to treat that as chametz she'avar alav ha-Pesach. Have a great day with, I almost forgot, I'm out of practice, with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, to David Hochhauser for all they do for me in general, and in particular in putting these in Shirim online, and thanks to all of you for listening. Have a great day.